The Lord be with you.
And with your
spirit. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you.
Tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to listen to Jesus. But the Pharisees and scribes began to complain, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So to them, he addressed this parable. "What man among you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, would not leave the 99 in the desert and go after the one lost to find it? When he does find it, he sets it on his shoulders with great joy. And upon his arrival home, he calls together his friends and neighbors and says to them, 'Rejoice with me, because I have found the lost sheep.' I tell you, in just the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 righteous people who have no need of repentance. Or what woman, having 10 coins and losing one, would not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she does find it, she calls together her neighbors and her friends and says to them, 'Rejoice with me, because I have found the lost coin.' In the same way, I tell you, there will be rejoicing among the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Then he said, "A man had two sons. The younger son said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me.' So the father divided the property between them. And after a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck that country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to the farm to tend the swine. And he longed to eat his fill of the pods on which the swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, 'How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat? But here I am dying from hunger. I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, Father, I have sinned against you. I have sinned against heaven, and I have no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as one you would treat one of your hired workers.' So he got up, went back to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him, and said to his son, and no, his son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But his father quickly ordered the servants, 'Quickly bring the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take a fatted calf and slaughter it. Then let us celebrate with a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found.' Then the celebration began. Now the older son had been out in the field, and on his way back, he neared the house and heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what this might mean. The servant said to him, 'Your brother has returned, and your father has slaughtered the fatted calf, because he has him back safe and sound. He became angry. And when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father in reply, "Look, all these years I served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast with my friends. But when your son returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughtered the fatted calf." He said to him, "My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But now we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead, but he came to life again. He was lost, but now has been found." The gospel of the Lord.
The parable of the prodigal son is like a kaleidoscope. For those of you who don't know what a kaleidoscope is, you look through it and you turn it and it's got all these colors and images and stuff in it. But it offers countless beautiful insights into what it means to follow Christ. One of the insights we often overlook has to do with the greatest danger we face as so-called practicing Catholics. The danger of living our faith only on the surface, of not letting it penetrate the depths of our hearts. This parable teaches us that it is possible to live in the Father's house without really getting to know the Father. The younger son didn't really know his father. He didn't know how much his father loved him and how eagerly his father wanted to give to him his property and joy. And as a result, he paid his father a colossal insult by demanding his share of the inheritance while his father was still alive. It was a way of saying that his father would be of more use to him dead than alive. And the older son was really no better. On the surface, he seemed to do everything right, but he had no idea about how much his father cared for him. And so he resented the celebration at his brother's return. Although they had lived their entire lives under the same roof, the two brothers had never opened their hearts to their father. They had closed themselves into the petty little world of their egoism. And we can easily do the same. We can spend our whole lives as practicing Catholics, going through all the right motions and looking great on the outside, but not really opening our hearts to God, not getting to know him on a personal, intimate level. And that's a risky way to live our faith. We could easily end up separated from the Father for good, eating corn husks and missing out on the joyful celebration of the Father's love. Several years ago, around 2007, a group of Christian sociologists published the results of a study that they had been conducting over a five-year period called the Obstacles to Growth Survey. It was conducted on about 20,000 Christians with ages ranging from 15 to 88, the majority of whom came from the United States. And the survey found that on average, more than 4 in 10 Christians around the world say they often or always rush from task to task. About 6 in 10 Christians say that it's often or always true that the busyness of life gets in the way of developing their relationship with God. And according to the study, professionals whose busyness interferes with developing their relationship with God includes lawyers at 72%, managers at 67%, nurses at 66%, pastors at 65%, go figure, teachers 64%, salespeople 61%, business owners 61%, and housewives at 57%. The authors of the study concluded that the accelerated pace and activity level of the modern day is distracting us from God. And if that was the conclusion nearly 15 years ago, Imagine what the numbers are today. Here was basically their line of reasoning. Christians, number one, are assimilating to a culture of busyness, of hurry and overload, which leads to, number two, God becoming more marginalized in Christians' lives, which leads to, three, a deteriorating relationship with God, which leads to, four, Christians becoming even more vulnerable to adopting secular assumptions about how to live, which leads to, number five, more conformity to a culture of busyness, hurry, and overload. And it begins a vicious cycle. It is possible to ascribe too much weight to sociological studies, but I think this one certainly harmonizes with the experience of the two sons in the parable. Something made them so self-centered and distracted that they were never able to get to know their father. Maybe it was busyness, or maybe it was something else. If nothing else, though, the survey, I think, gives us food for thought. It's frightening to think about the two brothers from this parable. Both of them thought that they knew their father. They didn't realize that they were blinded by self-centeredness. So, how can we avoid falling into the same tragic situation of living in the Father's house without really letting the Father's grace touch our hearts? First of all, we need to humbly ask God to help us recognize our faults so that we can work to overcome them with His grace. One simple way to do this is to be physically and spiritually present and alert at Sunday Mass, or any Mass for that matter, to make a concerted effort to mean the words we say during Mass and to prayerfully attend to the words and prayers of the priest. The sacred liturgy is full of the mystery of God, and when offered well, it provides a template for a deep relationship with the Father. If we make a conscious effort to listen and prayerfully enter into it, it becomes a source of enlightenment and renewal, not just a mindless routine or a weekend obligation. It's an intimate encounter with our Creator and our Redeemer. One way to help in that effort is to perhaps arrive a few minutes before Mass, to let the noise of life's busyness die down before the sacred liturgy begins. That also means keeping the constant chatter to a minimum, reminding ourselves that this is first and foremost the temple of the Lord. So loud talking and distracting conversations are really not appropriate in here, and out of charity toward those praying, ought to be had outside. Second, if we truly want to both live in the Father's house and get to know the Father's heart, there is no better means to do that than regular and frequent confession. This is the constant and undeniable experience of the saints. Confession forces us to exercise the virtue of humility, the unbreakable shield against superficiality and hypocrisy. Here at St. Joseph's, we've even added two additional confession times, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. to 12 in the chapel. The other times are Wednesdays at 5 p.m. and Fridays at 10:30 a.m., both in the parish chapel, and then, of course, the regular Saturday time here in the church from 3 to around 4:50. The great saints of the church tell us that a good rule of thumb is to go to confession at least once a month. Padre Pio used to tell people to go at least every 8 days. If you haven't been to confession in a while, I encourage you to begin, and to do so regularly and with devotion. The Lord is waiting for you here. All you have to do is respond and cooperate with that grace and receive His mercy and His forgiveness. Anything deterring you from that is not from God. And so, when we receive Christ today in Holy Communion, let us ask for the grace to stay always close to His heart, and promise that with his grace, we will do our best to make that grace take root in our lives.